Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. Peace talks between Colombia's government and the country's most powerful rebel group are scheduled to take place early next month at a neutral site, Norway's capital, Oslo. The Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, has been trying for nearly 50 years to overthrow the government. FARC says it's fighting for the rural poor in a struggle against Colombia's rich and powerful, but the leftist guerrilla organization is financed primarily by kidnappings and drug trafficking. A decade ago, peace talks aimed at ending the long civil war ended in bitter failure, and in the end, the initiative actually made the conflict even worse. But this time, perhaps, the conditions in Colombia may be primed for peace. Our two guests on Global Journalist today are a correspondent based in the capital of Bogota and a human rights activist who specializes in Colombian affairs. Patricia Lee writes for El País and several other publications, and she's a Colombian lawyer. Ximena Sanchez works for the Washington Office on Latin America, or WOLA. Patricia and Ximena, welcome to Global Journalist.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Good morning. Let's talk first about the positive aspects of the peace talks and then get into the potential pitfalls. So, Patricia, are there some reasons to be optimistic about the upcoming talks in Oslo?
Yes, indeed. There has been a very long struggle, armed struggle in Colombia since the 60s or since the 50s of the last century. And there have been several peace processes that have been thwarted, that have not reached any agreement. And this has had a Colombian people have paid a very big price because of these failures. So there is a hope that this process may lead to a final resolution of this armed conflict that is the longest conflict in the continent, because the FARC are not, as you can expect, some kind of Al-Qaeda or some kind of student-like guerrilla or partisan group. This is the only peasant guerrilla that has existed in the continent during the last 50 or 60 years, so it has very big roots, and that's why it has been so difficult to reach a process and an agreement.
And Ximena, what is your contention on whether there's some optimism here?
There have been four peace efforts in the past 30 years in Colombia. The last one crashing and burning rather terribly, and that was 10 years ago. However, the situation in Colombia right now is very different and much more primed for a peace process to move forward. First of all, the Colombian government, headed by Santos, is far more pragmatic. It's also a far more reasonable government that wishes to see real security on the ground and is willing to look at it in a politically negotiated way. Also, they've put on some very good heavyweights in that the negotiating table, who are perhaps the best negotiators for this difficult task. The FARC is at a stage where they've been severely fragmented and been in a sense recovering from the loss of all of their leadership.
Okay.
And they're far more flexible. And we see a negotiating team that includes Norway. Norway is a government that has negotiated the most chronic, most complex, and most difficult conflicts in the world. And that is different than the prior peace processes.
Okay. And Patricia, let me ask you, and I think a lot of people, a lot of our listeners, when they think about Colombia, they think about the drug cartels, Pablo Escobar, the Medellin and Cali cartels, and that it's just a very violent country because of the cocaine smuggling. But things have changed there in the past decade as far as the conditions. Could you kind of just touch on that for a moment?
Yes, it changed. The big paramilitary, the big narco traffic bands have been displaced or divided. In fact, the main narco dealers have been displaced to Mexico. And in the last years, there has been a process of the militarization of the paramilitary bands that were the auxiliaries to the narco traffic. However, these bands continue existing, and there have been several processes of the violence by these bands in the last years, months anyway. But the political situation and the political climate has changed. You can travel through Colombia as you couldn't do before, 10 years before, and there is a better economical situation also that allows this process to go on. Anyway, I would like to add that there are very big problems here, because you have a problem of the displaced. There have been 5 million people displaced by this conflict, and there have been a very big expropriation of land. That is the main issue that will be at stake in Norway.
Yes, and now the U.S. government has designated FARC a terrorist organization, and the New York Times reports that Washington has given billions of dollars in military and anti-narcotics aid to Colombia. Let me ask both of you, starting with Ximena, how is the U.S. involvement affecting the peace process?
Well, I think the most important thing about this process is that the U.S. is not the main player involved, but Norway and Cuba are. And the U.S. has expressed through President Obama a statement on the matter, and as well as Senator John Kerry, willingness to help and support where needed.
Okay. And Patricia, what's your opinion about the U.S. government's role in this? And
I don't know the present role they are playing in the negotiation.
Well, I guess another part of that, what I'm talking about really is the fact that the United States is taking a more aggressive stance in Colombia with as far as military involvement and aid, how that affects the peace process.
Well, in first place, it has strengthened the military, Colombian military, that have been giving very big strikes against the FARC. That is a fact. However, this military presence in Colombia is, I don't think it has been crucial in eliminating the coca production in the country, and it has not been essential to eliminate the paramilitary violence that is still taking place in the country. So I think it has been somehow one-sided.
And would you agree, Ximena? Are they in some ways doing more harm than good?
Well, the U.S. assistance to Colombia has basically gone down in terms of numbers in recent years. It has been a tremendous amount of money, with 80% of it being military anti-narcotics aid until 2007. It has basically not resolved the security problem, nor led to a decreased coca cultivation. Rather, the opposite. It's helped to disperse the coca throughout the country, generating other problems. I would say, in a sense, the United States has been a third party to the conflict because it has been bolstering one side, combating mostly our areas and targeting those areas. So for the United States, the most important thing would be for there to be a politically negotiated solution to the conflict, because that could help resolve many of the issues the U.S. wants resolved in Colombia: the security, the drug trafficking, the land issues, and the political questions.
Right. Now, one thing I want to raise, former Colombian President Uribe issued a statement this month criticizing the government for negotiating with a terrorist group. He compares a negotiation with the FARC to a negotiation with Al-Qaeda. Patricia, does he have a point, or what's your opinion of that comment?
Well, I have read a commentary about a former minister with President Uribe who said that this peace agreement could be signed by Uribe himself, because actually it's the result of the weakening of the FARC during the last 10 years. So I really think that there is much of a political struggle and of a political discussion between Uribe and Santos, but I'm not quite sure that he would be really against the center of the question that is being discussed. Anyway, of course, Uribe is the one that has held a more tough stance against the FARC, and that's why he is expressing today some kind of betrayal of President Santos, of what has been done, what they did together in the last 10 years. But I really think there is no, this peace plan is a consequence of what Uribe and Santos did together in the last 10 years.
Okay. And Jimena, a blog written by a colleague of yours at WOLA pointed out the results of a poll commissioned by several of Colombia's principal media outlets. And the poll found that 77% of Colombians approve of President Santos's decision to initiate peace negotiations with FARC. And an analyst quoted in this article said, the populations affected by the conflict are literally tired of it. And this, do you think that that all sides are just kind of exhausted by this and are just ready to negotiate and come up with this an agreement?
Well, the first thing is that President Maduro is a spoiler of the process, and he's also linked very powerful economic interests that are interested in conflict to further their economic agenda. And he's also being a hypocrite because most of his government has been implicated for ties to parapoliticians and paramilitaries who are also on U.S. foreign terrorism list. In terms of groups, there have been several letters put out by many communities and stating that they want a resolution to the conflict, that there's been more displacement, more pressure, more difficulties because of the conflict. They want it to end. We saw a mass uprising of indigenous movement in Cauca in recent months, specifically because they don't want the armed groups of any size in their territories because of the human rights violations they endure. We've seen the Marcha Patriotica, which is a broad-based movement of mostly campesinos, students, Afro-Colombian, indigenous, and other groups calling for peace in Colombia. So I would say that civil society has very revived in the past year, calling for a solution, and that the Santos government is listening to that. Both the FARC and the ELN have put out letters saying they're willing to negotiate. And so, yes, I would say Colombian society is tired and wants to find a solution.
And, Patricia, let's talk about the media a bit. I know that for many years, Colombia has been one of the most dangerous places for journalists to operate. And there have, even this year, been some kidnappings. But overall, my understanding is that it's easier for reporters now to operate in Colombia, and they are actually being credited with helping to bring the conflict to this point where there's a talk of peace. How would you, kind of, first in a broad brush, characterize the change in the atmosphere for journalists in Colombia?
Well, yes, there has been Colombia has been one of the most fatal countries for the practice of journalism in the last 25 years. As much as for the trade unions, there have been more than 30 trade unions killed last year, and more than 3,000 killed since 1995, 1996. So there has been a very big danger for our profession as well as for other professions in the country during these 25 years. But anyway, I think that now the situation has changed somehow, that there are better conditions to practice journalism in Colombia, and that the same media have helped to settle the basis of the process of the peace process that is taking place, because they are showing that the people in Colombia want peace and are tired of so many years and or decades of armed conflict.
And yourself personally, did you ever feel your life was in danger? And has it changed for you personally how you operate as a journalist in Colombia?
Well, I think that now there is a change, and you can work freely. I think there is a new situation in the last years that allows you to operate and to do your work in a better way without the risk of being kidnapped or being killed. But anyway, as I tell you, this situation is not as rosy as you could think.
Right.
Because last year, I repeat, there were 30 trade unionists killed. It doesn't happen in any country of the world.
Right.
In any country of the world, there have been 3,000 unionists killed in the last 25 years.
Yeah, and I know, Jimena, you've worked quite a bit on this situation with the trade unionists. Can you comment on how bad that is there?
The situation for trade unions in Colombia remains very critical since the U.S. and Colombia signed the Labor Action Plan in April 2011 to improve labor rights in Colombia. We've had 34 trade unionists killed and another 485 received death threats. We see tremendous pressure against trade unionists, but also against land rights activists, mostly displaced people and victims who are reclaiming their lands that have been illegally taken over by paramilitaries. We see that with journalists, there continues to be a lot of self-censorship. So while Colombia doesn't have the massacres and the tremendous number of killings it did, like it did in the 1980s, serious obstacles to security still remain a major concern.
Okay. That's an astounding number of people who have been killed and kidnapped as far as the trade unionist problem. Maybe Patricia, if you can ask, I can ask you first, what's being done about that? When and what can be done?
Well, the first thing is to eliminate violence. I mean, not just the question of the peace process with the FARC, but the problem of the justice with all the paramilitary organizations that are still acting in Colombia. Even if they are not the big paramilitary organizations of the last decade, there are a lot of criminal bands that came out from this process that are still acting. Mm-hmm. And the only way to finish with this process is to put an end to the endemic problems that bring out these bands. The first one is, in first place, to punish them and to disarm them. The second question is a question of land, of the expropriation of land that has been one of the main processes, negative processes in the last two decades, and it was the first point in the agenda of the negotiations in Oslo. And the question of poverty and the displacement of people. If you can't solve these questions, these central endemic questions, you can't solve the problem of violence.
Okay, I want to get into more about this phenomenon of the displaced persons, but before we continue our discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You also can find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. So please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. You could also follow us on Twitter @GJJournalist. Now, Patricia, I'm trying to, you know, I'm reading about the numbers of these displaced persons. It's pretty astounding. Can you kind of give a quick, fairly brief, overall description of this problem and maybe how it, when it began to get worse and what happened?
Well, actually, it began in the 1980s when the first peace process came to an end, and when we began with the violence of the paramilitary bands that were connected with the narcotraffic. Actually, I can say that there was a war for land between narcotraffic dealers and the guerrilla organizations and the peasants of Colombia that were displaced because the lands were expropriated. This process took place during the 19th and the 2000s, and it took place in many places of Colombia, in the north, in the coast, in the Llanos Orientales, in the richest lands of Colombia that were grabbed by the paramilitaries and the aides and their supporters, and that led to this process of expelling 5 million people from their lands and sending them to the outskirts of the cities, and creating big problems in cities, and creating very big social questions that demanded to be solved.
What's up? I mean, or Patricia, have either of you visited some of these? Are they in encampments, or where are they, like, refugees?
Well, I used to work for the UN Special Representative on Internally Displaced Persons, who was in charge of basically helping to put together the framework that exists today to address the internally displaced population. And for the past 12 years, I've visited 4 or 5 times a year Colombia, areas affected by displacement. What I can say is that Colombia is a complete paradox. It has the best legislation, programs, and even a very active constitutional court who's advocated for IDP's rights, yet the reality on the ground is that there is a major protection crisis. Most people are displaced 3 to 4 times. IDP leaders are often targeted and killed, and you have a disproportionate effect of this phenomena on Afro descendants and indigenous people.
Now, by IDP, internally displaced persons, they when they are displaced from their land and they go to what is their life like? I mean, what I'm trying to get across is whether they're living like refugees and having difficulty surviving?
Unlike other displaced populations around the world, you don't see these mass camps of concentrated people. You see people who often flee to relatives' homes or eventually to the shanty towns around the largest cities of Colombia, like Bogota, Cali, Medellin, and they're able to survive in terms of basic foods and so forth. Actually, the area where Colombia is best at addressing displacement is giving them basic humanitarian aid. However, these are populations that are extremely impoverished and marginalized. Their children are forced into recruitment by all of the illegal armed groups, and it's a situation where mostly campesino rural farmers are now in an area where they don't have the skills to survive, to integrate properly, to be able to take care of all of their needs. And you're creating a total subclass of folk that are beyond the rural poor, that are desperately trying to survive.
It seems like that's a recipe for disaster in a way, because if they negotiate a settlement with FARC and they don't do anything about these people, you think they might rise up in a rebellion. Is that a possibility?
It's very important to stop the cycle of violence, to deal with these very traumatized people and to find solutions to their problems. One of their problems is the fact that most of their lands have been taken over by paramilitary and other groups, insurgent groups, and that economic projects are being implemented in those lands. In the case of Afro-Colombian indigenous, these are lands that by Colombian law they have the right to. But there are also many rural farmers that don't have land titles that's being resolved. And basically, yes, this needs to be addressed. It needs to be a central part of the peace agreement that comes forward is how do you deal with the displaced. We've seen in Sri Lanka, we've seen in Bosnia-Herzegovina, and in other peace processes that this becomes a central part of the process, because if you don't address it, you have generations of folks that can continue to perpetrate the conflict.
And Patricia, I want you to weigh in on this. Can't the government just go in there and say, you know, this is, you know, support the courts and say this is, these people should get their land back. It's down on paper and kind of, but they would have to confront the paramilitaries, correct?
Well, there is a law that demands the restitution of the land to the peasants, but it is a very difficult process. Because you have to go against the people who have grabbed the land by the force and who have, in many cases, killed the people who live there or have displaced them, and now you have to take them out of these lands. It is you have to do it into take it into practice, and that is the main problem, I think. That's why I think that in the peace process that is will begin now, this question will be a decisive one. And I'm not quite sure whether it will be solved or not. This is one of the pitfalls of the process that is going on that I am a little bit doubtful. You may advance in the peace talk, but these questions that have to be done in reality are the main challenges to the government.
Right. And any final thoughts? We just have about a minute left. Jimena, do you, on October 8th in Oslo, do you think that we're going to hear some good news out of that process?
Well, I think that everyone is hoping that this is good news, and I think everyone should support as much as possible. It's very difficult. The obstacles are huge. There are clashes between what some of the political and economic elites in Colombia want and what some of the rights of the people are in many of the rural areas. But that said, political negotiation is one way to resolve all of these problems, and it should be given the best shot possible.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much for coming on our show. We've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist. Our guests on Global Journalist today were Patricia Lee, a correspondent in Bogota, and Jimena Sanchez, who works for the Washington Office on Latin America, or WOLA. They provided a vivid portrayal of the armed conflicts in Colombia and the possibilities for peace between the nation's largest rebel group and the government. But of course, many problems remain in that country, and we perhaps can revisit this area in the future. But we've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist, produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Our program is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer. Donovan Ferguson was our lead producer. Please join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.